Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination Series 2017. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number, and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Questions 1 to 4. You will hear four short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than three words or a number for each detail. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. Which type of gym membership does the woman choose? B. When exactly will the woman have her first session in the gym?
Sports Express.
Hello, I'm interested in joining your gym.
Great. We've got gold membership. That's £39 per month, and you can come in as often as you want. Or silver membership. That's £10 per month. Then you pay each time you visit.
Well, I'd like to come two or three times a week, so I'll go for the first one.
OK. You'll need to have an introductory session in the gym. You could come on Thursday at 4pm, Saturday at 11am, or Monday at 10am.
The morning slot at the weekend would suit me best.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Sports Express.
Hello, I'm interested in joining your gym.
Great. We've got gold membership. That's £39 per month, and you can come in as often as you want. Or silver membership. That's £10 per month. Then you pay each time you visit.
Well, I'd like to come two or three times a week, so I'll go for the first one.
OK. You'll need to have an introductory session in the gym. You could come on Thursday at 4pm, Saturday at 11am, or Monday at 10am.
The morning slot at the weekend would suit me best.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Question 2. A. Why are the man and woman unable to go to the concert on Tuesday evening? B. Where does the man suggest they go on Friday?
Hi, Jenny. I just want to let you know about the concerts that are on all this week in the park. Well, it's bad news. They've cancelled the first one, that's the one on Monday, and it's sold out on the next night, I'm afraid. There are tickets for Wednesday and Thursday, but I know you're not free then. Anyway, I've got another idea for Friday. My friend Joe has just sent an email inviting us to a party that evening, and I've said we'll go. I hope that's okay. Remember him? You met him when we went to the art gallery last week. See you later. Hi, Jenny. I just want to let you know about the concerts that are on all this week in the park. Well, it's bad news. They've cancelled the first one, that's the one on Monday, and it's sold out on the next night, I'm afraid. There are tickets for Wednesday and Thursday, but I know you're not free then. Anyway, I've got another idea for Friday. My friend Joe has just sent an email inviting us to a party that evening, and I've said we'll go. I hope that's okay. Remember him? You met him when we went to the art gallery last week. See you later.
Question 3. A. Which other name for puffins was the girl surprised to find out? B. What is the girl going to do next?
Marta, how are you getting on with your project on birds? You've chosen puffins, haven't you?
Yes, I've started making notes.
Good. Did you know that puffins are also called sea parrots because of their brightly coloured beaks?
Oh, that's interesting. I've always known them as sea clowns. That's what my dad calls them. Anyway, can I ask you about something? I've got all this data on the numbers of puffins in different places around the world, but I'm not sure what to do with it.
Why don't you draw a graph?
OK, I will. I'm just going to find some photographs, then I'll do that. Thanks.
Marta, how are you getting on with your project on birds? You've chosen puffins, haven't you?
Yes, I've started making notes.
Good. Did you know that puffins are also called sea parrots because of their brightly coloured beaks?
Oh, that's interesting. I've always known them as sea clowns. That's what my dad calls them. Anyway, can I ask you about something? I've got all this data on the numbers of puffins in different places around the world, but I'm not sure what to do with it.
Why don't you draw a graph?
OK, I will. I'm just going to find some photographs, then I'll do that. Thanks.
Question 4. A. What type of building was the hotel originally? B. When did the hotel open?
Don't miss next week's programme, in which we'll be finding out about another building with an interesting history. Walking into the entrance of the Liberty Hotel in Boston, you could easily mistake it for a shopping centre with several boutique shops around a central fountain. But it started life as a prison, and it certainly didn't look this attractive. The building dates back to 1851. It went into business in 2007 when the first guests were welcomed through its doors, although the plans to transform it into a luxury hotel had been drawn up 17 years earlier in 1990. Don't miss next week's programme, in which we'll be finding out about another building with an interesting history. Walking into the entrance of the Liberty Hotel in Boston, you could easily mistake it for a shopping centre with several boutique shops around a central fountain. But it started life as a prison, and it certainly didn't look this attractive. The building dates back to 1851. It went into business in 2007 when the first guests were welcomed through its doors, although the plans to transform it into a luxury hotel had been drawn up 17 years earlier in 1990.
That is the end of the four short recordings. In a moment you will hear question 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 5. You will hear a man who works in a library giving a talk to a group of college students. Listen to the talk and complete the notes below. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Thank you for coming to this talk today. As you know, I'm going to tell you about an opportunity to work as a volunteer during the summer holidays at the Central Library. There are several things you can get involved with if you decide to volunteer with us. The main thing is working with children who come to the library for our summer activities and clubs. We've had a holiday club for many years. Some of you may have come along when it was called the Blue Bear Club. We renamed it recently, and these days it's known as Little Monsters, and it's very popular. We've got different activities for different age groups. For the younger children, from 3 to 5 years old, there's the morning art group, which you might like to help us with. The children do a range of activities like designing and producing paper hats or printing with potatoes. They can also have their faces painted to look like their favourite animal. These activities can get quite messy, so we advise all volunteers to wear old clothes for this session. Then there's story time after lunch each day, and on Monday and Wednesday afternoons we do songs and games. We need several volunteers for these activities. For 6 to 10-year-old children, there's a drama club for those who are not so keen on spending their free time reading. We also have another club, Book Start, which is specifically aimed at those with reading difficulties. Volunteers work with individual children, and it's amazing how much they can improve and gain confidence over a short period of time. Some of you might like to consider helping out with our over-60s club too. They meet twice a week, and we're currently considering several suggestions for future activities like language classes or even dancing. At the moment, we offer courses in computer skills, and it's really useful if there are several volunteers on hand for this to demonstrate how to do things. Some of our older visitors have poor vision and miss being able to read easily, so we ask volunteers to read to them. We have newspapers for them to choose from. We also have audiobooks. These are novels which have been recorded, which our visitors can take home with them. We are hugely grateful for all the help that we receive from our volunteers every summer, and we couldn't offer the clubs and activities without this support. At the end of the summer, we have a party for everyone who has given us some of their time, and everyone gets a certificate which shows what they have helped with. We usually post these to your home addresses about a week after you have finished. I hope some of you may be interested in helping at the library this summer. If you are, our website address is www.centrallibrary.com, and you'll see a section called Contribute, which will tell you a lot more. You'll find an application form on the Participate page. Thank you very much for your time.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Thank you for coming to this talk today. As you know, I'm going to tell you about an opportunity to work as a volunteer during the summer holidays at the Central Library. There are several things you can get involved with if you decide to volunteer with us. The main thing is working with children who come to the library for our summer activities and clubs. We've had a holiday club for many years. Some of you may have come along when it was called the Blue Bear Club. We renamed it recently, and these days it's known as Little Monsters, and it's very popular. We've got different activities for different age groups. For the younger children, from 3 to 5 years old, there's the Morning Art Group, which you might like to help us with. The children do a range of activities like designing and producing paper hats or printing with potatoes. They can also have their faces painted to look like their favourite animal. These activities can get quite messy, so we advise all volunteers to wear old clothes for this session. Then there's story time after lunch each day, and on Monday and Wednesday afternoons we do songs and games. We need several volunteers for these activities. For 6 to 10-year-old children, there's a drama club for those who are not so keen on spending their free time reading. We also have another club, Book Start, which is specifically aimed at those with reading difficulties. Volunteers work with individual children, and it's amazing how much they can improve and gain confidence over a short period of time. Some of you might like to consider helping out with our over-60s club too. They meet twice a week, and we're currently considering several suggestions for future activities like language classes or even dancing. At the moment, we offer courses in computer skills, and it's really useful if there are several volunteers on hand for this to demonstrate how to do things. Some of our older visitors have poor vision and miss being able to read easily, so we ask volunteers to read to them. We have newspapers for them to choose from. We also have audiobooks. These are novels which have been recorded, which our visitors can take home with them. We are hugely grateful for all the help that we receive from our volunteers every summer, and we couldn't offer the clubs and activities without this support. At the end of the summer, we have a party for everyone who has given us some of their time, and everyone gets a certificate which shows what they have helped with. We usually post these to your home addresses about a week after you have finished. I hope some of you may be interested in helping at the library this summer. If you are, our website address is www.centrallibrary.com, and you'll see a section called Contribute, which will tell you a lot more. You'll find an application form on the Participate page. Thank you very much for your time.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment you will hear question 6. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 6. You will hear 6 people talking about homework. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
I get loads of homework at the moment. I'd be lying if I said that I enjoy doing it, but I've come to realise that it gives me a chance to go over what we've learned in class and be sure that it all makes sense. I suppose the alternative would be to have longer lessons, learning everything more slowly and thoroughly, but I don't think I'd be able to focus if we had to spend any more time than we already do in class.
Speaker 2.
If I had the choice, of course I'd prefer not to have any homework. And to be honest, it doesn't make any difference what day it is. At the weekend, the last thing I want to think about is schoolwork, and after school, I'd rather just chill out. But I realise homework is important. For me, it's much more motivating if we're asked to do some individual work and find out all about something, rather than just do exercises or learn things by heart.
Speaker 3.
Sometimes I do homework with a friend, either at home or in a cafe, and other times one of our parents might have a look at what we're doing. I don't see why we shouldn't be able to do it with someone else, as long as we get it done. Though what I really think is that there are far more interesting things we could be doing in our free time. If our lessons were clearer, or if everyone concentrated more in class, we wouldn't have to do any at all.
Speaker 4.
I can see why we have to do homework, though I'd rather not if I could choose. I just find that by the time I get home from school, I'm worn out. I feel like I've been on the go for hours, and the last thing I want to do is open my books all over again. You probably think it would be easier at the weekend when we've had a chance to switch off, but that's the problem. It's sometimes even harder to get into it when you're feeling relaxed.
Speaker 5. I guess the point of homework is for our teachers to be able to check what we've learnt, so I don't think it's right when I hear my classmates going on about their mum or dad giving them a hand with it. I sometimes chat to mine about what I've got to do, especially if it's a bigger piece of work that involves a bit of background reading or some research. But I'll always do my homework on my own afterwards. Speaker 6.
Of course there are things I'd rather spend my time doing than homework, but I wouldn't go as far as to say that there's no point in doing it at all. I know some people who would, though. What I find is that no matter which room I do my homework in, there's always something to distract me, something else going on. So, in my opinion, it'd be better to spend more time in class instead. I don't suppose our teachers would like that, though.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
I get loads of homework at the moment. I'd be lying if I said that I enjoy doing it, but I've come to realise that it gives me a chance to go over what we've learned in class and be sure that it all makes sense. I suppose the alternative would be to have longer lessons, learning everything more slowly and thoroughly. But I don't think I'd be able to focus if we had to spend any more time than we already do in class.
Speaker 2.
If I had the choice, of course I'd prefer not to have any homework. And to be honest, it doesn't make any difference what day it is. At the weekend, the last thing I want to think about is schoolwork, and after school, I'd rather just chill out. But I realise homework is important. For me, it's much more motivating if we're asked to do some individual work and find out all about something, rather than just do exercises or learn things by heart.
Speaker 3.
Sometimes I do homework with a friend, either at home or in a cafe, and other times one of our parents might have a look at what we're doing. I don't see why we shouldn't be able to do it with someone else, as long as we get it done. Though what I really think is that there are far more interesting things we could be doing in our free time. If our lessons were clearer, or if everyone concentrated more in class, we wouldn't have to do any at all.
Speaker 4.
I can see why we have to do homework, though I'd rather not if I could choose. I just find that by the time I get home from school, I'm worn out. I feel like I've been on the go for hours, and the last thing I want to do is open my books all over again. You probably think it would be easier at the weekend when we've had a chance to switch off, but that's the problem. It's sometimes even harder to get into it when you're feeling relaxed.
Speaker 5. I guess the point of homework is for our teachers to be able to check what we've learnt, so I don't think it's right when I hear my classmates going on about their mum or dad giving them a hand with it. I sometimes chat to mine about what I've got to do, especially if it's a bigger piece of work that involves a bit of background reading or some research, but I'll always do my homework on my own afterwards. Speaker 6.
Of course there are things I'd rather spend my time doing than homework, but I wouldn't go as far as to say that there's no point in doing it at all. I know some people who would, though. What I find is that no matter which room I do my homework in, there's always something to distract me, something else going on. So, in my opinion, it'd be better to spend more time in class instead. I don't suppose our teachers would like that, though.
That is the end of question six. In a moment, you will hear question seven. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. You will hear an interview with a man called Ben Drummond, who set up a coffee roasting business. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
With me in the studio is Ben Drummond, a young man who set up a business roasting coffee beans. Ben, you graduated from university last year. Did you study business there?
Actually, I started doing a degree in Spanish, but during my first year, I changed to Spanish and business management. I've always enjoyed languages, though the course wasn't as easy as I thought it'd be. But I realised it might not offer me enough options in the future. It wasn't because I wanted to earn a higher salary.
So, at that time, what did you think you would do after you finished university?
I thought I'd like to start off by getting some experience with a global company. Actually, at that time, my dad had an export company, and he was keen on me taking it over. Lots of my friends were talking about setting up their own companies, though I thought that might be too challenging to begin with.
And because you were studying a language at university, you spent a year abroad. Why did you choose Colombia?
I wanted to go somewhere with my best mate, Dan. We both liked the idea of going to South America, and Colombia sounded exciting. My tutor came from there, though that didn't influence my decision. My uncle lives there, and he suggested we stayed with him for a while, so I thought that would save us some money.
Did you learn about the coffee business in Colombia?
That's right. We had to do a business project there, as well as studying Spanish. I spent 3 months living and working on a coffee farm, which was a fantastic experience. I learned all about coffee growing and studied the costs of the process. I was even able to point out some ways of improving the management of the farm. And I recently heard that they've invested in a more advanced drying machine, which will help them make more money in the long run.
So how would you rate the coffee beans grown on that farm?
Pretty good, actually. The farm's on what's known as a zone of quality, which means it's on rich volcanic soil. The rainfall is good, and there's lots of sunlight. Great for coffee growing. And it means they can plan ahead to schedule the harvesting too. But these points alone don't guarantee a top quality crop. What can't be ignored is the skill and judgment of the farmer in dealing with the beans afterwards. That's the crucial element.
What sort of coffee beans do you import these days?
There are two main varieties of bean. Robusta, which are distinctly round beans, and Arabica, which are very slightly longer and thinner. I only use Arabica coffee beans. They're more commonly grown. Although they need more looking after, they're more sensitive to insect damage, for example. Most people prefer the sweeter taste too, though in fact, a top quality Robusta bean can taste better than a low quality Arabica.
So, tell me about the roasting process.
Well, the beans I receive are green. The roasting process produces the characteristic flavour of coffee, and it turns the beans a brown colour. You can judge when the beans are ready by checking the colour, although it's hard to be sure that each batch will be identical this way. As far as I'm concerned, the real art is to avoid overheating the beans, because at a particular point, they start producing heat themselves. You need to cool the oven down to compensate for this.
It sounds tricky, but you seem to have got it right, as your business is doing well, isn't it?
It is. But right now I work in the garage next to my dad's house, and I need more space. Once I've found somewhere suitable, then I could consider taking on one or two employees, and in the long term, move towards setting up a cafe, which is one of my main ambitions.
Well, good luck with all that, and thank you for talking to us today.
Thank you.
Now you will hear the interview again.
With me in the studio is Ben Drummond, a young man who set up a business roasting coffee beans. Ben, you graduated from university last year. Did you study business there?
Actually, I started doing a degree in Spanish. But during my first year, I changed to Spanish and business management. I've always enjoyed languages, though the course wasn't as easy as I thought it'd be. But I realised it might not offer me enough options in the future. It wasn't because I wanted to earn a higher salary.
So at that time, what did you think you would do after you finished university?
I thought I'd like to start off by getting some experience with a global company. Actually, at that time, my dad had an export company, and he was keen on me taking it over. Lots of my friends were talking about setting up their own companies, though I thought that might be too challenging to begin with.
And because you were studying a language at university, you spent a year abroad. Why did you choose Colombia?
I wanted to go somewhere with my best mate, Dan. We both liked the idea of going to South America, and Colombia sounded exciting. My tutor came from there, though that didn't influence my decision. My uncle lives there, and he suggested we stayed with him for a while, so I thought that would save us some money.
Did you learn about the coffee business in Colombia?
That's right. We had to do a business project there, as well as studying Spanish. I spent 3 months living and working on a coffee farm, which was a fantastic experience. I learned all about coffee growing and studied the costs of the process. I was even able to point out some ways of improving the management of the farm. And I recently heard that they've invested in a more advanced drying machine, which will help them make more money in the long run.
So how would you rate the coffee beans grown on that farm?
Pretty good, actually. The farm's on what's known as a zone of quality, which means it's on rich volcanic soil. The rainfall is good, and there's lots of sunlight. Great for coffee growing. And it means they can plan ahead to schedule the harvesting too. But these points alone don't guarantee a top quality crop. What can't be ignored is the skill and judgment of the farmer in dealing with the beans afterwards. That's the crucial element.
What sort of coffee beans do you import these days?
There are two main varieties of bean. Robusta, which are distinctly round beans, and Arabica, which are very slightly longer and thinner. I only use Arabica coffee beans. They're more commonly grown. Although they need more looking after, they're more sensitive to insect damage, for example. Most people prefer the sweeter taste too. Though, in fact, a top-quality Robusta bean can taste better than a low-quality Arabica.
So, tell me about the roasting process.
Well, the beans I receive are green. The roasting process produces the characteristic flavour of coffee, and it turns the beans a brown colour. You can judge when the beans are ready by checking the colour, although it's hard to be sure that each batch will be identical this way. As far as I'm concerned, the real art is to avoid overheating the beans, because at a particular point, they start producing heat themselves. You need to cool the oven down to compensate for this.
It sounds tricky, but you seem to have got it right, as your business is doing well, isn't it?
It is. But right now, I work in the garage next to my dad's house, and I need more space. Once I've found somewhere suitable, then I could consider taking on one or two employees, and in the long term, move towards setting up a cafe, which is one of my main ambitions.
Well, good luck with all that, and thank you for talking to us today.
Thank you.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Part A. You will hear a man giving a talk about a book he has reviewed. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Seashells and Their Secrets is one of those books in which the author takes a single subject, in this case shells, and finds doors to open in many directions. It is beautifully written and contains many stories about the author and her experiences. The main focus is the biology and ecology of mollusks, creatures which have external shells. This is linked from start to finish with human evolution across the centuries, and I shall give you a few examples from different points in the book. It begins with Triton, an ancient Greek god who, according to legend, was half man, half fish. He was the messenger of the sea. He carried a weapon which resembled a large fork, and his special feature was a shell, shaped like a tube, which he blew into like a trumpet to make the waves in the sea bigger or smaller. When he blew into it strongly, legend says that even giants ran away, as they imagined the sound to be the roar of a wild animal. The author also ventures into philosophy at one point, describing the darkness inside shells as if it is a hiding place for creatures to back into. You could even imagine a world within a shell if you hold one to your ear and hear the sound of wind and waves inside it. This all seemed to suggest the isolation of people to one French philosopher who was interested in the meaning of shapes and spaces. Another direction taken by the author is exploring how shells have been used in the past for business purposes. By the 14th century, a type of shell from the Maldives called the cowrie shell had become the main currency over a wide area. The shell had previously been traded in West Africa as a decoration, a form of jewellery. In the 18th century, it is estimated that 10 billion shells were taken from the Maldives and used in trading. The final example I will give today is a contemporary one. The author points out how shellfish populations, like those of many other creatures, are declining in number. If some species disappear altogether, knowledge will be lost, some of which we may only just be starting to discover. Scientists have identified a number of threats, including pollution and fishermen damaging the seabed. One species that is specifically exciting medical researchers is the geographic cone snail, which has one of the world's most complex poisons. The sting is usually fatal to humans, yet particular chemicals in it have been extracted and used successfully to treat people suffering from severe pain.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Seashells and Their Secrets is one of those books in which the author takes a single subject, in this case shells, and finds doors to open in many directions. It is beautifully written and contains many stories about the author and her experiences. The main focus is the biology and ecology of mollusks, creatures which have external shells. This is linked from start to finish with human evolution across the centuries, and I shall give you a few examples from different points in the book. It begins with Triton, an ancient Greek god who, according to legend, was half man, half fish. He was the messenger of the sea. He carried a weapon which resembled a large fork, and his special feature was a shell, shaped like a tube, which he blew into like a trumpet to make the waves in the sea bigger or smaller. When he blew into it strongly, legend says that even giants ran away, as they imagined the sound to be the roar of a wild animal. The author also ventures into philosophy at one point, describing the darkness inside shells as if it is a hiding place for creatures to back into. You could even imagine a world within a shell if you hold one to your ear and hear the sound of wind and waves inside it. This all seemed to suggest the isolation of people to one French philosopher who was interested in the meaning of shapes and spaces. Another direction taken by the author is exploring how shells have been used in the past for business purposes. By the 14th century, a type of shell from the Maldives called the cowrie shell had become the main currency over a wide area. The shell had previously been traded in West Africa as a decoration, a form of jewellery. In the 18th century, it is estimated that 10 billion shells were taken from the Maldives and used in trading. The final example I will give today is a contemporary one. The author points out how shellfish populations, like those of many other creatures, are declining in number. If some species disappear altogether, knowledge will be lost, some of which we may only just be starting to discover. Scientists have identified a number of threats, including pollution and fishermen damaging the seabed. One species that is specifically exciting medical researchers is the geographic cone snail, which has one of the world's most complex poisons. The sting is usually fatal to humans, yet particular chemicals in it have been extracted and used successfully to treat people suffering from severe pain.
Question 8, Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about a presentation they are going to give on seashells and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
Have you got a few minutes to discuss our presentation?
Sure. I've got some ideas. Have you?
I thought we could start by talking about why we chose the subject of seashells.
Good idea. For me, it reminds me of holidays when I was little. I loved playing with shells on the beach.
When I was a child, I used to draw big circular shapes in the sand and fill them with little round shells.
But I read that it's spiral-shaped ones that children tend to be drawn to, though I loved the long, thin ones.
Then perhaps we could move on to talk about other people. Shell collectors, for example.
Yes, that's something else I read about. The difference between shell collectors and people who study shells. They're called something like conchologists. Anyway, the first group of people are mainly concerned with the appearance of shells, whereas the latter are interested in scientific study.
OK. And we could include some examples of famous collections. There was a well-known author who happened to be a museum director too, who had one of the largest collections of seashells. And there's another in Japan, apparently, which was assembled by an emperor, though unfortunately it's not open to the public.
Interesting. Now, what else? It would be good to include more about people, I think.
How about something on the women in the Gambia? You know, in the article we read.
Oh, yes. They gather shellfish. Was it oysters?
Mm-hmm.
And the women were struggling to make a living, selling them by the side of the road. And they were gathering too many, so the stock was declining. Then who was it who drove past the women?
A businesswoman. She decided to help them by teaching them how to approach local people to get financial support and do marketing themselves so they could sell more successfully. They actually run their own organisation now. And of course they've learnt to avoid overfishing, so the population of shellfish has risen.
And as a result, the women have officially been asked to look after the national park. And it's all helped to improve the economy of the area too. It's a really positive story, isn't it?
Yes. And I think that should be enough for us to talk about.
Shall we have something for everyone to look at too? I was thinking about showing some slides or putting something up on the wall. How about some images of coins which have shells on them?
Or postage stamps instead? I read there are about 5,000 of them.
Let's go for my idea on slides and yours on the walls, so we can do one each.
Good idea.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Have you got a few minutes to discuss our presentation?
Sure. I've got some ideas. Have you?
I thought we could start by talking about why we chose the subject of seashells.
Good idea. For me, it reminds me of holidays when I was little. I loved playing with shells on the beach.
When I was a child, I used to draw big circular shapes in the sand and fill them with little round shells.
But I read that it's spiral-shaped ones that children tend to be drawn to, though I loved the long, thin ones.
Then perhaps we could move on to talk about other people, shell collectors, for example.
Yes, that's something else I read about, the difference between shell collectors and people who study shells. They're called something like conchologists. Anyway, the first group of people are mainly concerned with the appearance of shells, whereas the latter are interested in scientific study.
OK. And we could include some examples of famous collections. There was a well-known author who happened to be a museum director too, who had one of the largest collections of seashells. And there's another in Japan, apparently, which was assembled by an emperor, though unfortunately it's not open to the public.
Interesting. Now, what else? It would be good to include more about people, I think.
How about something on the women in the Gambia? You know, in the article we read.
Oh, yes. They gather shellfish. Was it oysters?
Mm-hmm.
And the women were struggling to make a living, selling them by the side of the road. And they were gathering too many, so the stock was declining. Then who was it who drove past the women?
A businesswoman. She decided to help them by teaching them how to approach local people to get financial support and do marketing themselves so they could sell more successfully. They actually run their own organisation now. And of course they've learnt to avoid overfishing, so the population of shellfish has risen.
And as a result, the women have officially been asked to look after the national park. And it's all helped to improve the economy of the area too. It's a really positive story, isn't it?
Yes. And I think that should be enough for us to talk about.
Shall we have something for everyone to look at too? I was thinking about showing some slides or putting something up on the wall. How about some images of coins which have shells on them?
Or postage stamps instead? I read there are about 5,000 of them.
Let's go for my idea on slides and yours on the walls, so we can do one each.
Good idea.
That is the end of question 8 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.